too many questions, and I also have to be fair to you so that you can answer all their questions. Okay, over to you. Over to you, ma'am. Thank you. Oh, you have a PowerPoint presentation. Yo. Bad news for you, advocate. Bonani is telling me that our equipment is too old for your, is not going to be compatible with your. If you can do that, and I know my members, they've received your CV long time ago, they've done their work. So, go on. Yes? Thank you very
much. I was thinking, Chair, that if she possibly wanted to utilize that facility, let's do everything so that she's not prejudiced, because the other person who came here to do a PowerPoint will try to do it. You can save that information from that computer to put to a different computer so that she illustrates what she's speaking to. I don't think it will be fair on her.
Yeah, you see, I have members that are serious about issues of fairness, and I will oblige. Okay.
Thank you.
It's important that we do that. We did that. You must remember earlier on, it's just that Judge Wena also had the hard copies, and that is why it was easy for us to say, let's go on, before it was sorted out. To do this. Want them to sleep, please. Staff, assist us. Make sure that the temperature is okay. I don't want them to sleep.
Good afternoon, honorable members.
Yes, good afternoon, ma'am.
Yes. I have looked at the public protector's role and functions, firstly from the perspective of the public. My question is that what does an ordinary South African understand the role and functions of the public protector to be? Through stakeholder orientation and outreach, I came to understand that the majority of South Africans understand the role of the public protector to be to alleviate and relieve them from inequalities, unemployment, and poverty created by the injustices of the past, primarily in respect of the adequate provision of basic socioeconomic rights, human rights, guarantees, and freedoms. These demands, I understand that they are not far-fetched because the government is mandated by the Constitution to deliver on those needs in a consistent, fair, effective, and accountable manner. And this is, at the end of the day, to create a very harmonious relationship between the citizens and government. The Constitution, the other part is that the public protector that I believe you'll find in me will be the one that is concerned about linking the symptomatic complaints that come to the office to the needs of the society at large. I gave a little sketch of showing you that I understand the Constitution and the Public Protectors Act. In terms of the Constitution, the Public Protector is a state institution that is meant to strengthen constitutional democracy. And the rest is the function, which is investigating any conduct in state affairs and in public administration in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or to result in impropriety. And this already tells us that the public protector can receive complaints or can initiate investigation on the basis of suspicion. The roles of the public protector are entrenched in Section 182 of the Constitution, and there are three folds: is investigation, reporting, and then taking remedial action. When the public protector does that, the public protector is guided by the principles of independence, impartiality, and exercising the functions, the powers and functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. And the public protector is subject to the Constitution and the law. I will just move quickly to the other slide. Let me just mention a little bit, because I'm just going to say one sentence about the relationship with other state organs and the obligations towards the public protector. The Constitution has already indicated what the responsibilities of other state organs are to support the office of the public protector so that it is effective and that it is independent. This is how I have unpacked what I understand practically, the strengthening of constitutional democracy. Through the investigation, through taking remedial action, and through reporting, the public protector is able to protect the human rights, the needs of the community, and the rule of law. Through outreach and through stakeholder orientation, and also through mediation, the public protector is able to be a change agent and transforming both the public administration and also transforming the people in the understanding of their rights. Also, we see that when the public protector investigates ethical breaches in terms of the Members' Ethics Act and put into life the Code of Ethics, the public protector becomes the guardian of ethics. The other part that is very important for me is through that exercise of investigation, of stakeholder orientation, of mediation, the public protector is able to free, also the advising of public administration is able to free the general public from corruption, from inefficiency, and undue benefit. We also understand that the rights of people and also the powers of the public protector, also the duties of the state, are entrenched in the Constitution. When a recommendation is made, an advice is made, and the state organ implements that advice, the supremacy of the Constitution is upheld. In that way, the public protector has that role of promoting the supremacy. The last thing here is that when a government has passed policies, there is an expectation that those policies will be implemented in a fair manner and in a proper manner. When the policies are not implemented or they are adopted and implemented in an improper manner, then the public protector is able to advise, and in most cases, then the state organ can then change or review the policy. The public protector also serves as an extra checks and balance. I want to demonstrate a little bit quickly that when the policy is adopted, for instance, the National Development Plan, it is expected that every state organ will then start during the strategic planning, in the initial steps of planning, those important policies are taken into account so that there will be an impact at the end of the day, and then there will be a relationship between the major government policies and the mandate of that institution. Let's assume that a certain state organ fails to implement that policy. The citizens are then deprived of that benefit of that policy. And we know that citizens have no control of the public body. Seeing that the public protector, it's a free access for everyone, then we assume that they report the grievance to the public protector. The public protector investigate and take remedial action, recommending that a policy be implemented. And then at the same time, what I'm believing is that at the same time, then the public should be orientated and about the policy to respond positively to that policy. The citizen will then be satisfied. The state will be satisfied because there would be a harmonious relationship between the citizen and the state. That is briefly what I think the public protector does. The other part that is important, I've already mentioned the guiding principles, but I just want to pick one of them, especially the independence of the public protector. The public protector's office needs to be functionally autonomous. This does not mean that the public protector's office cannot rely on the support regarding the resources from the state organ, but it only means that the state administration cannot influence the functioning of the public protector. And the other factor is that it has to be external to the administration and also operationally independent of the three spheres of government. The one part that is sensitive, some may not agree with me, is that it is an agreed factor in all ombudsmen that the public protector is assumed to be an expert in the field of ombudsmen. And therefore, one can use consultants, but not to the point where they usurp your function as a public protector.
Okay, you have 2 minutes more to go.
Okay. I'm going to rush to what I can contribute. One of the main contributions that I will make to the office is the following. It's something that I have done when I was appointed as a deputy, was to introduce a very speedy resolution of complaints, establishing the early resolution and making sure that there is no backlog, a vigorous resolution of the estate. The other one is a transformational remedies. In my current job, that's what I've been doing, designing remedies for compliance And I just want to state that there is a relationship between the problems that come to the Office of the Public Protector, and most of the time there is an underlying factor, which is abuse of power. The abuse of power also can happen because probably we don't have adequate policies or we don't implement in a proper manner. Honorable members, I'm just going to the my conclusion, and I'm saying that my contribution in a broader sense, is that I will be able to ensure that the burden of government to provide grants, houses as an example, are lessened, because South Africans should be able to find employment. There are wonderful policies of government. If they are implemented properly, then the government will be able to provide employment and therefore preparing our community to be equal and have equal participation in the economy of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There you are, members. Let me start with Honorable Kuranoff, then Honorable Fantam, Honorable Bladenburg, Bongo, and Tseke. And you are going to come first, Honorable Swart, in the next round. Did you have your hand up? How come I didn't see it? Okay, that's fine. Don't worry. You'll be given a chance. I will give you. Let's go for that round for now.
Thank you, Chairperson, Advocate. I'm here. I have looked at your employment record. And I think since 1986, you had 11 jobs. And on average, they've lasted between 1 and 2 years. With the exception when there was an appointment linked to a term, the deputy protector, and when you were at legal aid, it was slightly longer. Now, I would like your comment on that. You know, you've been with the gambling board 1 year, and you are here again here trying for a new job. So is it not too inconsistent? I really would like your comments on that. And then secondly, what is your views of the independence of the Public Protector's Office? You know, just your views on that, you know, in terms of the present circumstances.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Advocate Goodman. In your CV, you say that you are currently... Sorry, I just need to find my page. The Executive Manager, Chief Compliance at the National Gambling Board. Am I correct? That's currently your job. You're not suspended.
On that point,
are you suspended or not from that job? Are you currently working at that job?
Member, ask the question. Yes. She will answer the question when she has the opportunity. Can you just proceed? Is that your only question?
Okay, so I have a follow-up question. Okay, so you say that you are currently employed at the Gambling Board as the Executive Manager of Compliance. And then in your questionnaire, you have listed that... I can't remember which section it was. I think it's 3.4, that you've never been subjected to any internal disciplinary proceedings or anything of that nature. Am I correct in both those points?
I think we have to be fair to you, member, because some of the questions that you were asking, you wanted that question answered so that you can proceed to the next question. Maybe, do you want to respond to that one? I'm just allowing her because I can see that she is constrained now from what she wants to ask. Yes, you were asking her if she is. Are you currently on suspension? I think that's what the member is asking.
My answer is the following. We had an altercation during a meeting with my boss. Then I had immediately after nomination, then I receive a letter that says that I have said that my boss is biased. I apologize and we try to resolve the matter. I am in terms of the notice.
So in terms of the notice, you are not currently serving in that position. You are suspended.
Yes.
Why did you not inform this committee? I mean, in fact, in your questionnaire, you say that you've said no for the question of, have you ever faced internal investigation, disciplinary inquiry, or been dismissed from employment? You've said no.
In my former employment, yes, that's true. That was true when I said that. The issue with my employer, I apologized, we resolved. It was just, I will send the letter. It says that you have said that a particular person is biased, really, for someone to be suspended on that. So you will see the facts in the letter.
Okay, sorry, I just need to be clear about this. As we sit here, are you currently suspended?
Yes,
okay, thank you.
It's answered, member.
I have answered.
Mm. All right. I have Honorable Bredenbach.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Then Bongo is you after her.
Good afternoon, Advocate Goodman. Just to follow up on the previous question, when were you suspended?
I received a letter in June.
In June?
Yes, but we then discussed the matter, apologized, and for me it was over.
Well, you see, the date on your questionnaire is the 8th of July, 2016,
sir. It was referring to previous employment when I read it.
I don't think so. Okay. In any event, that's not my question. My question is the following. You are now suspended because you have accused somebody of being biased.
Yes.
Not sure who. You have a history of confrontation with your superiors. You accused Advocate Martinsella of being biased. You had a run-in with her on several issues. You accused Advocate Mashwana of sexual harassment. And all of these claims were found to be baseless by various committees or whomsoever investigated them. You now are applying for the job of public protector in a climate where the public protector has an office that is fully behind her. And given your history in that office, how do you propose to take over that office from Advocate Madonsela without causing absolute mayhem?
Okay, thank you very much. I must say that conflict is necessary, especially when there is a wrong committed. And in every way I'm accused is when I'm trying to rectify the wrongs. The other part that I want to emphasize is that it is unfortunate that people view the people who are raising the wrongs to be the one that are wrong. There was never any investigation undertaken for sexual harassment or anything, so there was never a finding around that. And during, as I remember, according to my record, the parliament has never found me wrong on what I have raised with parliament. It's not really as strong as you put it. The second part about Advocate Madonsela, I just want to emphasize that as a deputy public protector or even as a responsible member of a servant of the public, when there is anything that is wrong, conflict becomes necessary because what was the result? The result was change. If you remember very well, the issues that brought Mr. Mashwana and I to Parliament, we have resolved on our own. Once we sat down, we realized that the media took things out of proportion and so on, and we have resolved. And I just, the other part is the issue with Advocate Madonsela. When the office was opening a door for political battles in that office, I had to stand for that office. When something, the mandate was not complied with, I had to stand for the Public Protector's Office. And what happened? We started to apply the Act as it was in terms of appointments, in terms of promotions. We did policies, and we worked in harmony. When Ms. Advocate Madonsela realized that I'm questioning the acceptance of invites to a political party, which for me at that time was opening a door for inviting politics in that office, she then corrected that, isn't it? So for me, I think that those conflicts are always necessary. It is just my character. When something is wrong, I talk to a person. Let me address you on this last one. I had instituted a labor matter. And naturally, when you institute a labor matter, an employer cannot charge you and suspend you. An employer has got to resolve that problem first. That is why I'm saying that I will share with the committee all the documentation so you can read my complaint and see that a suspension is a response of the complaint.
Advocate, I think at this stage, because you are responding to the questions of Honorable Breitenbach, you might wish to respond to the questions raised by Honorable Gornanov. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that question. My employment started in 1986. I was studying still, and then I was just registered for one course. So I thought, let me get employment. I got employment at the Standard Bank, and when I was there, then I completed my degree, then I went to serve articles. It's not really for me employment as such, the serving articles. So I served articles, and while I was serving articles, I got appointed as administrator in a law firm. I'm young. A position of an administrator was wonderful because that it introduced me to management, and I went to serve there. But during that time, I remember very well that I wouldn't want to stay 3 years in one position. I always wanted to grow. And then after that, I was appointed a public defender. That was a real job for the first time. And I stayed there. I remember that it was a pilot project, and we have to make sure that it becomes permanent. When it became permanent, it was time for me to leave. But there was an attorney who was sick and who ran a very successful firm. I was recommended to take over the firm for him until he came back. That is why you saw it is not hoping. Then when he came back, I opened my own firm. Then I ran as Malmiki Shai attorneys. There was my belief that time was that, especially from the experience at the public defender's office, was a feeling that I have to be part of government to advise at that time, because it was important to have lawyers who can understand the constitution and who can advise government during that time. So I joined government. And my journey of government, going from education to science, if you can see on my CV, it was a transfer, because I had to assist in the writing of bills. And then I was appointed a deputy public protector. This position of ombudsman for me, it's a position of ombudsman. When you are an ombudsman, you are an ombudsman by character, and then that is the reason why I accepted a nomination. It's not hoping.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Tseke? Oh, you have a follow-up. Okay.
Advocate Goodman, I just have a follow-up question. My question was really, how do you think that you could possibly go back to this office without causing absolute mayhem? Bearing in mind that amongst other things that you said about Advocate Madonsela, to tell the truth, she's somebody I wouldn't want to work with or even be friends with. Now you want to go back to that office where she has great support and lead it. Tell me how you plan to do that.
Honorable member, I don't cause any mayhem. I just raise wrongs.
Can you speak through your mic so that you can be more audible?
I do not cause any mayhem. I just raise wrongs. I feel responsible in whatever position I am. At that time, I was not happy that we have opened doors for politics. And I felt that I either align or I go, and my position was at the end, and then my letter was very clear. It was just 7 years, and then I left in a nice way, with a farewell.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Pongo.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon, Advocate. I've been listening to you with great interest as you explain your understanding of independence, and I should say this, that I appreciate your understanding. I have two questions. One will be, what is your understanding of Section 182 of the Constitution because it gives some wide powers, wide powers to the public protector, that of investigating, reporting, and taking a remedial action. So what would be your broad understanding? But secondly, I also sympathize with the response that you are giving around the around what you provided to the committee. Because generally, we are not a tribunal. You can want to get into what may have happened at your workplace. But it will appear, I want you to comment about what seem to be facts here. That you, at this employment workplace, you always had a case or two around either it's issues of personality or so, because it is reported that you accused the former public protector of sexual harassment, which case was you did not win. And later on, you accused Mr. Mtetwa of forging your signature, which case you also did not win. You accused Advocate Madonsela with also a lot of allegations, which allegation could not stand the test of time. So I want you to just clear the air and share with the public on your comments around all this issue, because now it is what is brought to our attention that we are also suspended at work. So I want you to share with the committee and the public about these specific cases with a clear conscience.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Some of the...
Just hold on. If you could just dot record the questions so that you can answer them all together.
All right.
Thank you. Honorable Tseke.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon, Advocate Goodman. My first question relates to what you have raised in your questionnaire. And I want to agree with you that the Office of the Public Protector represents the poor and the rich, the strong and the weak, the vulnerable and the previously disadvantaged individuals, and those previously advantaged. And as we're speaking, there are few regional offices that are closed. And how would you make sure, if you appointed, that the people at the grassroots level access the services of the public protector? Because we know most of us are staying very far from the provincial offices. And how are you going to make sure that there's enough capacity and in the provincial offices? And secondly, suppose you are appointed as a public protector, how would you respond to a complaint and an allegation of financial impropriety against a public office bearer of the national legislative arm of the state? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Some of the issues that Advocate Bonga and others have raised were canvassed in Parliament, as you are aware. And the incident with Advocate Mashwana that you've been asked to comment on, I'm sure you're also aware that there was an ad hoc committee that found that your claims were unsubstantiated. So when you comment on that, will you just bear that in mind as well? And when we were on the Justice Committee and there were a number of issues relating to the Office of the Public Protector during Advocate Madonsela's tenure when you were there, the Justice Committee also labeled your allegations as office politics and indicated that it appears that you've, to use the words, have not been a happy camper during your tenure as Deputy Public Protector. Would you, when you comment on Advocate Bonga, just please comment on those aspects in particular as well, that the issues were canvassed at length and there were findings brought out. That's the first issue. The second issue relates to more general philosophical independence of the Public Protector's office and your relationship with Parliament. When you were Deputy Public Protector, how would you improve that should you be appointed to that position again? obviously with the issue of financial constraints, the finances are a big constraint. So that's a more general question. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Shivambu, do you want to go to the next round or would you rather? Okay. You know, Advocate?
Yes.
Most, I'm sure you are already picking up the pattern in terms of the questions that members are asking. It appears as though members have some fundamental questions to you around issues of your leadership style and how you conduct yourself in a work environment. And one of the things that jumped to me in your questionnaire is that you define the public protector as the mother of the South African nation. Now, I want you to comment on that because sometimes as women, we tend to stereotype ourselves and we end up downplaying or underplaying the role and the authority that we are commanding. And I'm not sure if your statement is speaking to that. There is also a point here where you make a point about, you know, that you serve as the first woman to bravely enter the office of the public protector. And I wondered something that can speak to somebody at home. What is it that you did when you were in that position? You are saying you entered there, and I want that woman in you to tell me exactly, concretely, like saying, this is exactly what I did, and give us practical examples of what you did so that we can see that indeed you are the mother of the nation.
Honorable Chair, there was a question that I didn't get a chance to respond to, the first one by Honorable Kurenov, around what is your views on independence of the public protector. Do you still want me to? Okay. My view is that the independence of the public protector, both as a person, as an institution, and also the view, the independence of those who are assisting the public protector, should be free from influence, free from control, and should be able to focus on the fact that it is only the law that can influence in terms of the public protector, the ethics that the public protector must comply with, and the mandate, and nothing else. That is the way I understand it. It means that the public protector cannot be pressured and cannot be manipulated in any form in the manner in which she receives the complaints, she investigates, she reports, and also orientate the community. Okay, thank you. The question of mayhem and the situations in my life as a deputy public protector, I will tell you the foundation of this. When I joined Advocate Mushwana, he then appointed me as an internal ombudsman dealing with all the disputes that happens inside. Every complaint would come to me, whether it's against who in the office. If it is against the office itself, or if it is against management, then I would deal with those internal dispute in the office. I would become a mediator between management and staff, and we even improve the policies to say that instead of grievances, we can mediate, and then it's only when it fails that people can then approach the grievance policies. Those whole thing came from there. When there was an anonymous letter against Advocate Madonsela, she gave it to me to deal with the matter. And initially, it was matters against the CEO. And when she was also implicated, I thought that it was beyond me, and then I couldn't deal with that because I couldn't investigate her. So that is just the foundation of, and I don't want to leave you with an impression that I cause any mayhem. The situation at the National Gambling Board, if you may have read in papers, there has been a dysfunctionality. The board was suspended, and I was a greater part of reconstructing that institution. And I'm still a greater part of reconstructing that institution. And since I took over from where they gave me, I got only 100% achievement on my targets. So there is the good thing that you will find in me if you let yourself understand me for who I am, not how the media has described me or how people twist words to describe me. And I would like this honorable ad hoc committee to try as much to understand me for who I am. There is another question raised by Honorable Bongo about Section 182. My constitution has failed, but Section 182 is the one that gives the powers to the public protector. The first power of the public protector is to investigate conduct. I know it by heart. To investigate conduct in state affairs or in any sphere of government that is improper. And if you look at the Public Protector Act, the Constitution was already saying that it regulates these powers. But when you look at Section 4 and 5 of the Public Protector Act, you will see that it was attempting to define what maladministration is in the context of our country. It was saying capricious, unfair, improper, all those sorts of things. That means wrong. It's just wrong, wrong things that happen. So the powers are very clear that the public protector can initiate an investigation. If you read my questionnaire, one of the things I wanted to do if appointed was to look mostly on the backlog in matters that reflects the needs of the community. For instance, the basic socioeconomic rights, the issues of land claims, they don't get finalized. There's the backlog in the Office of the Public Protector. One can prioritize those issues that has to do with the basic socioeconomic rights. Coming to the reporting part of the power of the public protector, it says may report. It means may report on what, on the findings. And the reporting of the public protector, there are twofold. One, the public protector can table the report with the National Assembly at request or when she feels that it is necessary for the National Assembly to look into the report, and also when she feels it's necessary to intervene. The rule around the report of the public protector is that if the report becomes public, but we must talk about it because the report must become public when it is finalized, because during the investigation, the public protector has to protect the confidentiality of the affairs that are accumulated or collated through investigation. So when she feels that the report has got to be held confidential, then the report, the public protector will inform the committee and then give reasons why the report should be confidential. The last part, which is interesting, which took a long time for everybody to understand it the same way, is remedial action. The remedial action of the public protector was never meant to be like a court order. The basic rule is that it is not binding. However, because of the constitutional imperatives for state organs to be accountable, and the fact that it has to be appropriate, when it is appropriate, and the state organ at the same time has a responsibility to comply, to be accountable, or to do certain things, then the state organ cannot just reject it without without a judicial review, because that will be refusing to perform a function in terms of the act. So that has been a debate for a long time with the ombudsman all over the world around the the force of the recommendation, but it is not having the same value as the court order.
Okay. I'm going to give the members that have not had a say in this round. Let me take...
There are other questions that about regional offices.
Okay.
The regional offices of the public protector, in principle, they have to function in the same way as the national office is functioning, effective. What is important is that what I used to do with the regional offices was I used to visit all provinces and then study how they operate, trying to improve the quality of the investigations, the quality of reporting, and also evaluating why the files are finalized. So what is important is to make sure that there is quality that is improved there, and also there is an extension, because most of the challenges that people face are faced in rural areas, in semi-rural areas, where people are not able to access justice. So it is important that we emphasize and strengthen the regional offices because they are mostly very far from the cities. The other question was how do we respond to allegation of financial impropriety? Remember that if it is a member of the executive, a cabinet, we know that we will then apply the Members' Ethics Act. The code is very clear about gifts, that one must declare and must get a permission to accept them. And then it's very clear that the members must disclose their financial interest. And then it's very clear on what, in summary, the Members' Ethics Act, it's saying that the cabinet, the MECs, must act in good faith when performing a public function. And I want to add that in addition to the Members' Ethics Act, we will then apply the Corruption Act because it's more giving effect to making those ethical expectations criminal when they are deviated from. The stories about the previous public protectors have been settled during that time. And I must say in a nice way that both of them, the public protectors, brothers and sisters, and I wouldn't want to be divided with the people that I've worked with. We have good relationship, and they understood my point of view at that time. The other important question relates to the improvement of financial constraints. I think one of the best things in an ombudsman is that it was intended to be informal, cost-effective, speedy. That is why when I joined the public protector as a deputy, the first thing was to design a mechanism, a unit, where we can just receive call, resolve in one day, resolve in one within 1 month. But that for me is what the original intention of the Ombudsman Office was to try to resolve the problems in a speedy manner so that the public administration is not distracted and it can function smoothly. The Honorable Chair, I have used the, because I'm a woman, I have used the term mother. But the mother I'm talking about here is just an umbrella body that looks after the Constitution, representing the constitutional values. It is not a mother in the sense of a female part. I was trying to find a better word that shows that when one is a public protector, what one should do is to look at the constitutional values first and see that and use the mandate, because the mandate it gives you the drive to make sure the constitutional values are realized. When I went to the public protector's office, the first thing for me that I realized, obviously, Advocate Moshwana was not even having a CEO, so there was too much for him. The first thing I did was to set foundations, write the policies that are not there, rationalize those that were there to be compliant with the Constitution. I drew manuals like investigation manuals. I drew remedial action framework, a protocol, in a way that we should be consistent when we are working. And those instruments are still being used at the Public Protector's Office. I also studied the mechanisms that investigators are using, record them so that we can train. And indeed, I trained. We called people from Canada to sharpen the investigations. We also train all the investigators on fraud in examinations. And then the other thing that I did as well was to change the manner in which we were writing the reports, to write a report that can inform the strengthening of democracy so that at some stage in the life of that office, we're able to have a barometer where we can measure whether what is the movement of the constitutional democracy, whether we are growing around it or whether we are going back. That was very important to me to have a report that reports impact. The strategic plans that are aligned with the Constitution, with the mandate in the Constitution directly. Today we have the National Development Plan. Every strategic plan must start there as well, aligning so that at the end of the day, we can see that we have contributed to unemployment. One of the things I did as well with unemployment was instead of using consultants, I was preferring to use interns. We were paying less than what we would have paid if one is using lawyers. Because if you use me as an attorney, I'm going to charge you maybe $500,000. But if you employ somebody for a year as a temporary, you'd pay much less than that. So that was an option I brought there, and we were using interns from Tshwane University of Technology, and that helped a lot. Chairperson, I also want to emphasize that around the issue of what I said in the questionnaire as the first woman that went there, remember that the times are different. At the time of Mr. Moshwana, the foundation was still needed to be built. Women were not holding these positions that much, and it was an appreciation to say that I got an opportunity to be the first one that went into that office and then contributed a lot according to the records that I have. I also uplifted women. We only had seniors as male people. And then during that time, we trained women. We changed policies, acting policies, so that women can also get an opportunity to higher positions. And we ended up appointing women in higher positions. Thank you.
Thank you. Just an observation before I move on. I can notice that when you are responding to some of the questions, I observe my members, sometimes they give some gestures of shock or something. I'm just saying it's an observation that I've just observed when you were giving some of the answers. Members, I'm taking the last round. Honorable Shivambo, Honorable Honyo, I was actually referring to you because I saw that you wanted to ask a question almost immediately when she responded. And Honorable Maisela and Honorable Motapo. Is there any other person other than those? This is the last round, members. Oh, Honorable Mwabe, you will be the last one. And same procedure. Honorable Masondo. Okay. No, my members are awake. That's a good thing. Okay. Honorable Shivam.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not comfortable with this candidate because she served as a deputy public protector before under Advocate Moshwana. accused him of sexual harassment. They threatened each other with litigations and taking each other to court and suing each other $3 million. Even if such is settled out of court, it means that she is irresponsible to not act against sexual harassment. If it did not exist, she's still irresponsible. I think that is one thing that must be clear here, that we cannot be taken, like, you cannot drag the institution of public protector in the mud that easily. I think that we must take issue with that. We'll discuss it when we deal with assessment later on. But two, even with the public protector advocate Tulima Dosel, when she was deputed, like, lots of public spats and writing of letters to parliament about internal issues that drag the name of the public protector in the mud. And what happens when you do that? It leads to the public losing confidence in that institution, because one of the senior people, a deputy public protector, is saying that this institution is political. These DA matters which are not being handled, there's this and that. And then how is the public expected to trust such an institution when a deputy public protector is busy muddying it in that fashion? And that person comes here and says that we must rationally appoint her as a public protector. I think we'd have degenerated if we do that. It's one of the things that we must never, ever consider when we're dealing with those issues. She's suspended from her current work. And she wants to be a public protector who must be trusted by all of us, must adjudicate over very contentious issues. I think that is one of the things that must be looked into. I know she applied to be a secretary of the Pan-African Parliament as well. Out of the 11 jobs that she had, she wanted to be a secretary of the Pan-African Parliament. Like, these are some of the issues. Like, then, and let me come to questions. That if
Shavambu, can you try to be crisp?
Yes.
Because most of what you've said now has already been said by other members.
If the unthinkable thing of appointing you as a public protector happens, how are you going to increase its accessibility? There is more than 200 local municipalities in South Africa. How are you going to make sure that those people who are in those local municipalities that do not have access to internet, do not have telephones, have access to the public protector's office? The second question.
Bambo, how do you expect her to answer that question when you say, if the unthinkable?
I
proceed, honorable member.
Oh, yeah, yes, saying that's fine. Yeah, she'll respond. She'll respond. Then the second and last issue is, Chair, quickly, is when the public protector, the advocate Tulima Dosel, came here in Parliament, I think one of the last appearances, there was discussion about the funding model in recognition of the fact that the money that is appropriated from Parliament is not adequate for the public protector's office. And there were a variety of ideas that were tossed around and What, because you know the internal systems and you have been there for a very long time, what do you think should be the much more durable funding model for the public protector's office that goes beyond the appropriation process that now the office is dependent on? And lastly, what is your view of the public protector report on Kandla? Do you agree fully with that the president of the Republic, of the ANC, I mean to say, acted outside the law? And that, as said by the Constitutional Court, that he failed to uphold, to defend, and respect the Constitution. Do you agree with that observation?
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Before you move on, I just want to take all that whole round. And if you can just jot down those so that we can allow her to respond. Honorable Hon?
No, it was me.
After.
Always. Thank you, Chair. It was indeed me.
Honorable Motapo, I'm sorry if your daughter, it was you. I thought I recorded it down here that it was you, Honorable yes. Member.
Thank you.
If you can try and be crisp, because most of your questions are very much the same, move the same line.
Yes, I'll try and steer clear
and
of that.
Be like Honorable Van Dam. She's a very good member.
Okay, I'll try my best. Thank you. Advocate, my question relates to the binding nature of the remedial action of the public protector. You stated in one of your answers that the debate amongst the ombudsmen of the world has been going on and that ultimately the view was that judicial review is the route to go for state institutions because they can't just leave it hanging in the air. So my question is very simple. Have you read the Nkandla judgment of the Constitutional Court? And if so, why don't you then agree with all other legal scholars of this country that this issue has been clarified in its finality by the Constitutional Court to state that indeed it is not merely recommendations, but it has actually the effect of a court order which can only be set aside by a judicial review? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Advocate. Emanating from your responses to questions by honourable members. Okay. I was saying, emanating from your responses to questions from honourable members, Advocate, how would you explain your interpersonal and communication skills then and now in respect to personal attributes which are relevant to this position which you have applied for? Thank you. That's my only question.
Thank you very much. That is commendable, Honorable Motapo. Honorable Maisan.
Thank you, Chair. With your experiences at the Public Protection Office, the perception is that it looks like it's a crime-busting entity instead of a nation-building entity. What would you suggest should be done to transform it into a nation-building entity? Thank you.
Honorable Mwabe.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Advocate. My short question is, since we've been in that office before, and now I'm here, Advocate, this side. Yeah, we have been in that office before, and now we have applied for this committee to consider you as well. I just want to know, in your own view, what is lacking in that office, and how that can be solved, and why do you think you are the best person to solve that or address it? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Masondo, and on that note, Temba, please do organize some coffee for my members. Okay. No, Honorable Masondo.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. given that the advocate has been there, seen that, and did that, what are the three key changes that she would bring about where she to be appointed as the public protector? I'm done.
Thank you. Advocate, over to you. And if you can make sure that you respond to all the questions and at the end just make sure that you say your last and final comments. Thank you.
I would like to raise the issue of conflicts and what, and I would like to address it, Honorable Shivambo. In the context of every conflict that I found myself in, whether I've caused it, whether it was caused where in my midst, it is where the interest of the entity I'm representing is colliding with the individual interest. Where the values of the organization, the vision or mission is threatened by individual personal interest, the mandatory requirements during Mr. Moshwana were not applied in full, and my insistence caused a conflict. And I want to just correct the facts that you found. I did not report Mr. Moshwana of sexual harassment. The media did. The people reported sexual harassment. I just informed him of what the people are saying in the office. It was not that I went anywhere to report Mr. Moshwana. And as the DPP is also a statutory office bearer, was delegated function of administrative nature, and it was important for me to bring the function closer to the statutory functions. And as I say that, when we sat down, we realized that it was a misunderstanding caused by media and other people who twisted the facts. That is why our relationship carried on in a better position than before. The second part that I want to address relates to the rural people, which is also my concern, because I have been in rural areas where we are making outreach on the role and function of the public protector. But the questions that people are asking are about where are we going to get water? When are we going to get electricity? So it shows that before one can get the basic needs settled, people would then become interested in other things. So in the rural areas, what we used to do, which was an initiative of Advocate Moshwana, was mobile offices. They used to work very well because we would go to the far remote areas and then establish mobile offices maybe every Wednesday here and so on, and people would go there and assist people to complete the complaints so that we can investigate the matters in the rural areas. And that was also enabled by the relationship we had with traditional leaders who always afforded us a free venues to do that. I did read, in terms of the Inkandla judgment, I did read the judgment. And I'm still saying that a recommendation, a remedial action, is not a court order, because the public protector and the court are not on equal standing. If the public protector was a court, then we would have a problem because it would not be as accessible as the remedial action. You cannot not comply with it unless you are saying that it is irrational. And the judgments are clarifying the position that you have to look at the nature of the remedial action that is taken, the language, and one of the other important factor around the remedial action is its implementability. If it is not implementable, it doesn't qualify as an appropriate remedial action and it can be challenged. So that is what I'm saying. I'm not saying a state organ should not. I say they must obey it because they are bound by the Constitution to be accountable, to support the office, to make sure the office is effective. But if the remedial action is irrational, and then we say everybody must just apply it, then there will be disaster. That is why you have to look at the nature of it, the language of it, and to see that it is binding. Honorable Motapo asked, how do you explain the interpersonal relationship? Everybody who knows you will tell you I've got integrity. They will never, you'll never find me accused of anything that has to do with dishonesty, with good faith, or with untrustworthiness. The only, if a person is uncomfortable with me, I've already answered, is if the personal interests are clashing with the interest of the institution where I'm responsible as well. the skills that I can bring as a deputy as well. Oh, there is a question about the crime, the perception that it is a crime-busting entity, and how do we bring it to nation building? Nation building for me is a very, it's something that I align with. I prefer to have a public protector whose remedial action will bring, will reconcile the state and the citizen. And this we have achieved during my time when we do the mediations and settlement agreement. One of the requirements in the settlement agreement is reconciliation. Because if you have the state and the citizen living in a divided manner, we would promote division instead of unity. So I would say that the public protector should focus on mediation, on dispute resolution, and also attend to issues that has to deal with the basic socioeconomic of individuals so that people are having equal opportunities, they feel equal, and maybe to inculcate what I can call the equality complex instead of superiority or inferiority complex, the equality complex for everybody so that they can function properly within the democracy. The other question was that since I've been in that office before, what is lacking? What I observed at the moment, it's mostly a backlog. And what causes backlog? It might be the problem of regrouping of the cases. Because during the time when I was a deputy, during the last quarter of the year, I would go in provinces. I would group, say, the cases relating to water affairs, cases relating to health. I would go with, say, 50 cases, one department. In 3 days, we reach a settlement, they're gone. So I think the regrouping is needed to try that model again to see if we can use that office cost effectively. The second thing, again, is that I can say that during after the launching of the early resolution, almost 80% of cases were resolved in that manner. 1 day, 2 days, 30 days, and so on. And the experience of being an ombudsman was inculcated. It was never meant to have a case ranging for 4 years and so on. That will be disastrous. Honorable Masondo was asking me, what are the key changes that you will bring? It's transformation. Transforming the most important thing about the ombudsman's office, because it needs speed, it needs rigorous, is to make sure that there is quality investigations. People are trained, people are experts. And one of the other things that I would want to reduce, which perhaps people will not agree with me, is that to make sure that we promote the independence, and promoting the independence is never to use consultants on the core function, because the core is investigation. It has to be done as independent as possible. The reporting, it has to be done as independent as possible. So that influence comes through consultants and so on. For me, it doesn't work. The other part that I'm sensitive about is the use of donations. The donations will never come without a condition. And if the condition comes, from my experience as a deputy public protector, we would have a donation and then we are obliged to share the strategic planning and get inputs from the donor. In that way, the office can be influenced. For me, I think that one of the things is to review the donation. And then the last part for me, I will emphasize, is my story from the beginning, is to prioritize the cases that has to do with the basic socio-economic needs of the community. In that way, I think in 7 years, one can stand and look back and say at least maybe 50% or 20% of people are working, queuing for Gautrain going to work, advertising for people to work for them instead of them applying for jobs. That is just the hope in my mind that if I'm given the position, I will be able to do that. The last thing is that I have done social responsibility, doing transformational work, outreach, called by women to talk about the constitutional rights and human dignity and so on. That office gives me that opportunity as well to orientate the stakeholders, not only about their rights, but to orientate them about their responsibilities, that they must take part in the process of passing legislation, take part in all matters that affect them, so that they understand what they are fighting for and why government cannot provide this now and will provide it tomorrow. So also to focus on state organs in terms of transformation, to look at one particular department at the time, for instance, pick the department that has got more cases, to deal with it for the whole year to make sure that the policies are intact and then there is a implementation plans for everything. Chairperson, I would like to conclude. Honorable members of parliament, if you look at my CV, you'll see that one of the strongest thing I am and I want to be is a peacemaker. I don't cause problems, I highlight problems. So I'm a peacemaker, and that's how I want you to accept me and understand me. Thank you.
That concludes our interview with Advocate Goodman. Thank you very much, ma'am. We shall hear from us. Thank you very much. Members, you can use 1 minute to just go to the ladies or something like that. Stretch for a few minutes, for 1 minute or so. I want to go to the... you need to do this. You are the ones that said on the 11th. They said on the 11th. And I said, members, do you realize that we've gone past 10 members? Okay, members, let's go. Let's go.